Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Coming Home Gathering, where we are here to discuss and remember how to come home to our hearts amid so much dynamic change taking place on our planet, what this idea of coming home even means, unlocking ancient and cosmic wisdom within, and creating a new path forward in our reality from this place of coming home. I am your host, Emily Britton. I'm the founder of Earthkeeper Healing. It's my great joy and honor to be here with all of you and to welcome our next speaker, the beautiful Tarya Ward. Tarya, thank you for being here.
It's so nice to be invited. Thank you so much. I have such deep respect for what your subject is, what you're doing, and I feel like it's so timely and so necessary, and I hope it's, broadly heard and helping many people. So thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. And again, thank you for being here. And I'm excited to explore what you have to share to this greater conversation of excavating our true reality from a failed reality and seeing where that conversation wants to go. Before we get into that, I want to first introduce you to everyone. So for those who might be new to Tarya and her work, she is a private practitioner offering dream analysis, psychological, and spiritual guidance to clients from all over the world. She has worked intensively with dreams for more than 50 years, and for nearly 30 years, she has been an avid student of indigenous ways of knowing and being. In addition to her private practice, Tarya conducts small private dream groups, teaches to a wide audience in regular lectures and interviews, and also conducts a monthly global community dream symposium, wherein persons from all over the world come to share their dreams and to listen to the collective dreaming mind. So I'm excited to maybe we can explore some of that too in our conversation. And
Absolutely.
before, yes. And before we do, I have this big question. It's a meaty one. We'll see where it wants to take us in this interview. The big question is, what does this idea of coming home mean to you?
Oh, wow. I feel like it's so, thank you for surprising me with that question. You know, the first image that comes to me is an image across the mountain tops, almost like the Great Wall of China that I just saw that in the recent newscasts, the Great Wall. But it's like the eternal journey, it's like it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. But we're always headed in that direction. It's so limitless. The innate sort of like potential that we're always, going toward, realizing, stepping toward and into. But I feel like our true home is the sort of cosmic center of our own beings, but of everything that is, and we're always going toward that center. That's the only real path, is the path toward that center. So, there's a lot of distractions along the way and a lot of, necessary involvements along the way that support that. But basically, I think the real path is that path toward the center of our beings, which is the center in the center of all that is. So there you go. There's a rambling statement.
Well, it's a hard question to answer. I'm glad I stumped you. It's kind of
Yeah,
fun.
there you go. I was like, whoa, okay. That's a really good one. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad that, and it was a beautiful answer, and I liked the imagery you had too of the Great Wall of China. But we are on this journey, and I think that's why we're having this conversation of really remembering that we're on the journey. I think many of us have forgotten. So,
Right. Yeah, it is it's quite a journey. So, and we're all on it, so we just find the way to support each other in it and inspire and help and bless each other in it. So, yeah.
And why do you think it's important to remember this journey, especially at this time on our planet with so much changing and shifting and kind of falling apart?
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today, is how to excavate our true nature out of the rubble of this reality that is crumbling. And I think at so many levels, it's It's crumbling. You know, I think our inner psychological life, you know, the old paradigms of how we've been raised and what we were taught in school, you know, we're seeing the tremendous limits of rationalism, you know, that we were trained in, that it's so almost what do I want to say? Damagingly limiting of, you know, understanding reality. This rationalist point of view, the scientific materialism that has been so prominent. And so it's, you know, so internally that's all coming down. Externally, we can see it everywhere. It's the, you know, the old systems just aren't working. You look at almost any system, the education system, the political systems, you know, the social systems. It's like all the systems, somehow the flaws and limitations of them all are being exposed. And so I think it's an interior and exterior process that we're all in. And this is the time that's been prophesied, right? Where the old reality comes undone. And how do we excavate our true nature from that? The true nature that's been hidden from us as we tried to adapt to all these things over the last centuries. We were just adapting to systems that weren't that don't have an eternal sort of like capacity to hold our true natures. So,
And so now it almost sounds like we're breaking free and we're all like fed up with it. It's like time to really honor what's really true. What's that eternal nature within?
yeah, I mean, I think people are fed up with it, and there are people who are clinging and trying to patch it together, so pathologically trying to patch it all back together. You know, and it's so everybody has their own response to this, you know, this internal event that some people can, I think we all can sense it, and everybody's just having a different response to it. How to What to think about that or how to respond to that. So, yes.
Yeah. Why do you think some people are clinging still? Why is there resistance to the old?
Well, you know, I will say, in my experience, you know, when my realities have exploded, and you know, I had a couple of events in life where everything that I thought I knew was exploded in almost a minute's time. There were about 3 years apart. There were two events of that nature, and the first was resigning from the ministry that I thought I'd be in the rest of my life, and it was my whole concept of myself as a minister. And of, you know, the system of approach to the divine that I thought was immortal. I thought it was working, and I thought it always would, and I was very committed to it. All of it came undone, and you know, that's a long story and a long journey. But you know, when it did, I didn't know what was real anymore. I had no idea who I was, what I was here for. And then about 3 years after that, my marriage exploded. So my family was gone. You know, the idea of family, I was no longer a mother in an integrated family. I was no longer, you know, all of the things. So it's like it was the complete rubble of a failed reality in that sense, you know. And I think a lot of people have experienced their own version of this. And what I went through in terms of the dissolution of the whole ego process, you know. Yeah, I think we have an instinctive revulsion to going through that. You know, it's like nobody, you know, just jumps right into the dark night of the soul. You know, nobody's like, yay, let's go. It's, you know, so I think that there are some people that are more, what do I want to say? Instinctively aware that there's, you know, a really important divine purpose to all this. And so they, you know, they go into it with interest and curiosity and courage. And there's some people who just think it's, you know, that they're just have to patch it all back together because it's everything's wrong about it because it doesn't feel good. And if it doesn't feel good, or if it's challenging the ego perspective, which, you know, a lot of people can't give that one up. And it's been trained into us for generations, you know. So, I feel like the old order is an addiction. It's like fighting an addiction. And a lot of people go into the fight to get over the addiction, and a lot of people just can't and won't. And I think there's an addiction to the old sense of power, the old sense of dominance, the old sense of, top down everything, and the uncertainty of letting that come undone is more than some people can tolerate. They don't have the instinctive, like, internal makeup for it or faith in it. Or, I have a feeling it's going to come done for potentially all of them anyway. So let's just hope that we can help everyone, and not judge each other and just get through it.
You're speaking to something that's really crucial in this, what we're experiencing and probably, getting deeper into experiencing in the years to come of what is happening on our planet, of this huge discomfort. And that I think it's human nature to want to run away from discomfort, but we actually need to be able to sit with it and not let it run us.
Right. Yes. Right. And somehow, I think there are ways of making friends with the discomfort, knowing that in some sense, it's your finest friend that's trying to get you through an addiction, that's trying to get you through the uncertainty, and it's uncomfortable to do that, So yeah, it's a place that can be. Actually, I don't want to say pleasant, but your friend, and you know it.
Yeah, almost like an invitation to come into relationship with it. Like it's, I and I think the first step for me at least is that just being aware of it. So where do you feel like is important to begin in this conversation of how do we find our true nature when everything else is collapsing? Where does one begin when we're facing such discomfort? When it's so hard to sit with the discomfort, how do we begin to find ourselves in this?
Well, that's a really good question. I will say what happened for me was that I allowed myself, I really didn't have a choice in one sense. I didn't have a job to go to after I quit the ministry. So in some sense, I allowed myself to go in through a deep depression. And I think I went into the depths of these places that I didn't even know existed. Because, from the time we're born, we're patching together this reality, that we're confronted with. And when the reality fails, you're kind of dropped into an emptiness. And I have a feeling that there may be a calling for all of us to embrace, that emptiness and to find the sort of truth of it. That at the basis of all this is the dissolution of all the illusions that we've been living. And part of that illusion is the illusion of the sort of manufactured self, the one that we created in order to be obedient to certain structures in our world, social structures and, economic structures and family structures and academic structure. We created this self that knew how to do all those things, but you take all that away, who am I? I was amazed when everything blew up that there was still a me standing there. And I just was interested to find out who that person was because dang, I'd never really had any time with her. And it became interesting to discover that. And it wasn't something that was very easily understood by other people. You know, other people kind of wanted me to snap out of it, and I was like, no, this is where I am. You know, I am learning a lot here. I went through, Emily, at that time that I'm referring to, you know, my own disillusions. I decided to get a doctorate in depth psychology, and I remember talking to the person that was my therapist at the time, and it was like I didn't want. On the one hand, I wanted to do this. The doctorate in depth psychology sounded like really like a good path for me, for lots of good reasons, as you can probably sense, since I was going into the depths. Let's learn out the psychology of all this, right? And on the other hand, it's like I didn't want to go into an academic atmosphere that was going to like retrain my mind in the ways that I just learned to untrain it. And so I was like in that place of I thought it was going to be antithetical to the doctorate I just gained by going through all that. And I have said many times, and I still believe it, that navigating those depths was more rigorous and challenging than getting a physical doctorate, you know, than going to class and writing the papers and doing the thing and, you know, passing the orals and, you know, doing all that. That was, you know, it's certainly challenging as we know, but the going through into these depths was way more challenging. And I felt like it was way more important and rewarding in a lot of ways. So, you know, I think it's going to be making friends with those depths. And in a way, when we're confronted with it, to say, oh, wow, isn't this going to be interesting? You know, instead of, there'll be some of that both, right? There'll be some of both, but yeah. So I think that's what it takes, is embracing the unknowing, the uncertainty, you know, and that's at the basis of physics, is getting in touch with the uncertainty principle, basically. You know, that it's like at the foundations of everything is this other reality. You know, classical physics wants to put together get it all lined up so that it's all explainable. You know, quantum physics is going into the uncertainty principle and allowing for whole other realities to be understood and immersed in. Yeah. So.
I have to go into that a little bit with the quantum physics part. Do you do a lot of work with quantum physics?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I'm not a physicist in any way, but I did actually teach a college class on the theories of David Bohm, the quantum physicist. You know,
Oh,
I
wow.
yeah, it was called the physics of thought, and I taught the process that he developed of the dialogue method that had a lot to do with understanding the nature of thought. And how thought runs us. We think it's something, we think we create our thoughts, but no, it's something that we take in like oxygen from someplace else. And we think our thoughts are our own, but they're not. And so how do you understand the nature of thought that is actually running us? He said, thought runs us. And once we realize that that's what's happening, we can change our thought and then change ourselves and change our world.
Wow. So when you're saying the thoughts run us, you're speaking more of like our mind, and the thoughts are coming into our mind from something outside of us. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, yeah, they're coming into us in our minds and almost at a cellular level. It's just like, here's how the reality that we have created, all of this is created by thought. So, and all of that thought just comes into us. You know, everyone has to have a house, everyone has to have streets, everyone has to have cars. You know, all these realities, it's all created by thought. And so that thought we think of as reality when it's only thought. And so the dialogue process that he created was so that we could understand, get into conversation. If somebody's challenging my thought, they're not challenging me, they're just challenging thought. But I feel identified with my thought, so I feel challenged. So he created this method where we could disidentify with our thoughts and get to know the nature of thought so that we could actually hear each other's and understand the field of consciousness that is sort of running all of us and how to relate ourselves to it and change our thought. And he says, as soon as you have a new thought, you have a new creation, because thought creates the world. So anyway, I taught that. So it's interesting. I w hadn't planned to go here at all, but here
Me
it came.
neither. Me
Yeah.
neither.
But I did teach a class called The Physics of Thought, and I taught the dialogue method developed by David Bohm, and I've been a very interested person in his thought as well as many others, in physics. I listen to the physicists, their podcasts and so forth, just for entertainment because I think it's so fascinating. So,
Yes.
but I don't call myself a physicist even remotely. No. Yeah.
Yeah,
So
it's a whole
there.
other universe. I know I'm not
It's
anywhere
like,
near there.
right, exactly. Yeah. So,
So I'm curious. I mean, this might take us outside of the quantum realm a little bit, quantum physics, but talking about how we actually can create new thoughts. For me, and especially with this conversation of coming home, that comes from our hearts. Does that feel true for you? And I don't know if this will speak to the quantum physics part of the conversation or to something else, but does that feel true to you too?
absolutely. I think that I worked with a lot of Indigenous elders, and that was a big part of my journey, in recovery, basically, and in discovering my true, getting my true nature out of the rubble of this failed reality was my work with Indigenous elders. And all of them will tell you that in their with their people and what's been known since forever, the thought of the heart is the true way of thought. And that, and even Jung, when he met Mountain Lake, one of his colleagues that it well somebody he respected in the southwestern part of the United States, when Mountain Lake told Jung that he thought that white people were crazy because they think with the head. And Jung was like, "Well, what do you think with?" And he said, "I think with the heart." And that had a big effect on Jung. I think, his thinking evolved after that. He just hadn't really heard that before. And I think that physicists are now understanding that there are cells within the heart that are the same as the cells within the brain, that the heart actually does think in terms of even the classical kind of physics kind of a mode of discovery. And that the head, as the indigenous people will tell you, is meant to be in service to the thought of the heart. But we have gone insane. It's a pathology that we make the head the thinking apparatus that runs the world. And clearly it's failing everything. It's not, that's not what it's meant to be. It's the thought of the heart that would have never led us in the directions of all this disaster that we've created, that of spoiling the planet and the extinctions of species and the poisoning of the waters and the earth and the soil and the air. And it's like the heart thinking would never have led us in that direction. It's the thought of the head that is insane unless it's connected to the heart. So there's a long answer to that.
Yeah, that really resonates. And I have to, going back a little bit when you were first sharing your story too, I have to share. I was laughing inside because you were talking about no one is celebrating or excited about going into a dark night of the soul. But I've also had this similar, uncannily similar experiences to what you described where it felt like the bottom was falling out, and there was no rock bottom. It was just an infinite free fall, and it was terrifying. And I think, speaking to the times we're in, I think we're starting to feel that, collectively and individually, this like, wait, what's happening? What is reality? Like, what do I believe in? And so I could really, really resonate with what you experienced, that you shared, and that with my own personal journey. And perhaps there's many of us who've gone through those journeys to help us in these times, to help kind of hold our hands through the free fall.
Right. Yeah, I think there are, and there will be more. And I think there's always more for us. Like I said, I thought it was all the worst that could be after I resigned from the ministry, and then never even imagining that my family would come undone. And I, nobody knows what's next, So it's like none of us know how far this goes in terms of, the realities that we're going to continue to unravel. But what we need to know is that there is a part of us that remains, that thrives and survives. And how do we get in touch with that and help each other find it in themselves and help the whole community find it in themselves and support each other through it? So yeah, it's a free fall in some sense because there's no end to the journey. Yeah. And I remember when I was trying to patch back my life, like think of, okay, I could do this and this and this, and then I could patch together some kind of reality that resembled the old one. It all came apart. I just couldn't, it was like blocks that wouldn't fit. I couldn't make it. So I had to just stay in the complete unknown and emptiness of it all. And I think that's what we have to help each other do, is not just try to patch it back together really fast, but find a sense of purpose and appreciation even for how to be in the depths of all that.
And so what is your guidance on how we navigate the depths and how we find ourselves in the depths or remain in ourselves, however you would word that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I will say the thing that that helped me, Emily, in my doctoral work as I was going through all this, I was still trying to work on my PhD. I ran into an author named Jurgen Kramer, who was a philosopher, a very interesting writer, but he used the term the indigenous mind. And then, as soon as I read that term, it was like the light bulb went on. And I thought, there's a name for this, where these depths I've been in that I was completely, utterly unfamiliar with. It's like, oh, there's a name for this. This is real. And I'm not crazy somehow. I don't know. Even though I was crazy in some kind of modern sense, I didn't have it. So I think it's going back to the indigenous mind, and I'll say a little bit about what I came to learn and discover. I wrote a whole dissertation on this, Reawakening Indigenous Sensibilities in the Western Psyche. But what I came to learn and discover about it is that, and this goes almost back to the quantum conversation, that the human apparatus, we have this original equipment that we have started during the last centuries or of training, externalizing the things. So we watch the TV to find out, or the app on the phone to find out what the weather's going to be, whereas we actually have an internal apparatus that could sense that and know that. You could smell the wind, you could see the behavior of the animals or the insects, or you could smell the dirt. And we have all the apparatus to sense where all that is, but we've externalized those powers. We don't teach them to ourselves or our children or anybody for generations, and we're losing it. But we have the apparatus, like all of the, even the technologies that computers can do, we have that internal apparatus, but we've externalized it. We've externalized God. It's out there. We're nothing. And that's how we're trained. And that's sort of how the political systems play on that too. You're nothing. We're the powerful ones. You need us. We don't need you. It has disempowered us and divorced us from our own true innate capacities and potentials. And the indigenous mind has all that. It knows that, I mean, as Archon Lushwala said, He said there in a rock is like a recording device. It can tell you everything about everything in the earth if you know how to understand it, if you know how to turn on this radio and listen to it. It's like we used to know how to be in touch with the spirit, the living spirit in all of that is, and that humans are actually constructed to do that. Somehow we divorced ourselves from all that by externalizing these powers and these potentials and thought that was a good idea. And it's not. And so now the recovery of that, the recovery of the indigenous way and the indigenous mind is, I think, the journey.
And can you define the indigenous way of thinking or the indigenous mind?
Well, that was my attempt right there in a long version.
And I understood it, but just for anyone
Yeah.
else listening, so what is it and how do we get it?
Yeah. Well, it's in our genes, as D Thomas Berry says. The journey, actually, I think I even have that quote. I think I brought it in my notes here. We must invent or reinvent a sustainable human culture by a descent into our pre-rational, our instinctive resources. Our cultural resources have lost their integrity. They cannot be trusted. What is needed now is not transcendence, but inscendence. Not the brain, but the gene. And so it's, transcendence is, putting a God out there, but also putting the technologies out there instead of our inner technologies that have these intuitions, these instincts, these ways of interpreting and understanding and receiving the information from all of creation, and knowing that we're embedded in the earth community, not above it, not superior to it, in many ways inferior to the intelligence of the earth community. The human is still trying to catch up, right? But we've got these destructive powers that other elements of nature don't have. And hopefully creative powers too. We just have to transform that now. And he talked about it as a cultural pathology, that we're pathological as a culture. And he said this pathology is manifest in the arrogance with which we reject our role as an integral member of the Earth community in favor of a radical anthropocentric life attitude. And it's, that anthropocentric life attitude, all of our education is about human, 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 human. We're not asking how do rocks think? How do you get in touch with the elements? How do you converse with the wind? We're not asking. It's all about human thought, human needs, human consumption, human exploitation of all of the rest of it. How do you train people to exploit it more? How do you and disassociate yourself from the emotions or the sensibilities that might go with that? So it's going back into our true nature and getting that true nature out of the rubble of this sort of failed system that we've created. And it's in, as Thomas Berry says, it's almost like all of the intelligence is in every little atom of our being. It's all there. And all we have to do is remember and reclaim it and listen to it and sort of proceed from there. And that's, the thought of the heart. So there, the indigenous mind's hard to pin down a there's another long explanation.
I know. Well, it's almost as hard to answer as like, what does coming home mean to you? So then my question is, what do you know or you have recommended practices that people can do to begin to reclaim their true nature, to find, remember, discover it?
Okay. Yes. I do have ways that it has have worked for me, and that I will be happy to share with you. I think everybody finds their way to it, just if you know it's important. For me, a couple of things. One is that I went on vision quests. I put myself out in the middle of nature all by myself twice for 10 days at a time, and several other times for anywhere between 24 hours and 4 days. So I've done a number of vision quests, but you go out there in the middle of nature and sit there with it and create sort of a ritual space so that you feel protected. And there's certain processes you go through to prepare yourself psychologically and physically to do that. But it's like you take yourself out of the system, completely out of the system. And it's like within a day or two, all of the thoughts of civilization were just became this sort of ancient memory. I was present to all of the life that was around me, and remembering it was like a deep remembrance. It was not alien. It was like remembering who I was. It was like, oh, this is who we are. And all the different animals and the weather, I could go on and on. I have long stories to tell about it all. It was just absolutely, utterly life-changing, and recognizing, our connection to all of this, and how I felt loved and welcomed there. And I tell you, out in nature by myself for 10 days, I didn't fear one thing except humans. I didn't want to be discovered by a human for whatever reason. But there wasn't anything else out there that was scary to me, not any of it. That was interesting too. It's like, because there was a way to just be in partnership and relationship to all of it. So I did vision quests. That was good. And I've done pilgrimages. Go to sacred places. Take yourself out of your ordinary reality and put yourself in an extraordinary one. I really recommend doing that, and doing it very intentionally and thoughtfully. But just allow yourself to sort of switch over into another mode of thinking. And the main thing that I teach and am all about, I'm a dream analyst. My doctorate in depth psychology. And I, the main thing that I do is private practice of dream analysis. And so I cannot emphasize enough the value and importance of listening to your dreams, learning how to be in relationship to your dreams. Dreams are a product of nature. They're absolutely a product of nature. Sometimes you think you can't understand a dream as much as you can't understand what this rock is saying, but you can. There's a language that you can learn there. And it's always trying to get you back to your own nature. That's the whole purpose of dreams. They are not going to try to help support your ego projects. They're not there for that. They're to get you back to yourself, your own deep, true nature, back to your heart. They come from the heart. They come from that intelligence. They're connected to all that intelligence. And so, and they're doing that every night, and people just throw it away. We just don't know. We've never been trained. We've never been taught how to listen to this voice of nature and our own nature that is forever trying to support and inform and warn and guide and heal us. And it's there consistently. It's like we have this, but we've turned off the radio and we just don't listen. So that's, that I would say that's a major tool for, I think, reawakening your connection to the dreaming mind. And the dream time is happening all the time, whether you're awake or asleep, and that's what the indigenous people will tell you. It's a dimension of consciousness that we all inhabit. So whether you remember your dreams of the night or not, you're still dreaming. Life is a dream if you just tune into the dimension of life that is that, and the dimension of our being that is that dream body, that dream nature. Because when we go into a dream, we have a body there, right? Well, that body is us. It's who we are. It's our actual self. And people have different beliefs about it, but that self that was here before we got a body and the one that'll be here after we leave the body is still that self, and that self is our dream self. It's that self that we are that has more immortality, more reality in some sense than this thing we call, our identity.
Like our physical identity.
Yeah, this is like the boat we're riding through this reality. But and we take care of it because you have to take care of your vehicle. But and the vehicle is a product, of the self. It's sacred. And as Thomas Berry says, it's the it's wired for all this intelligence. We just have kind of shut down our connection to what it's wired for.
So these kind of three are your three big recommendations of vision quests and pilgrimages and working with our dreams are really gateways into coming back to our true nature.
Yeah, and I would say, a miniature version of a vision quest is, sometimes it's recommended that you find a sit spot where you can just sit in nature, wherever that is, and be there if you can get there for 10 minutes or better, a half an hour or better, a little longer or better, half a day, whatever you can do, but just kind of be in that vision quest space. All of that information and that connection can download very quickly if we allow for it. And so don't take your devices and your books even, just like be with what's there and let it kind of like communicate with you and you communicate with it. And it wants to know you as much as you want to know it. I always feel like this tree is a little curious about me when I'm walking past, and so sometimes I'll stop and just touch it, and it's like they're aware of us. It's an intersubjective reality we exist within. We've just gotten this sort of narcissistic sort of frame of mind as humans, that we think of it as an it, and it's not. It's a living being.
Yeah, and we're all in relationship, exactly what you're saying. We're in relationship with everything.
Right, yeah, we are. Yeah, so to enter the field of that reality with some kind of curiosity and humility and interest in communicating and communicating with it and it being communicated to by it. I've had a tree speak to me in the most direct way. That's a good story, but I don't know if we have time for that now. But I mean, they it will happen. It can happen.
I have enough time. Do you feel like you can share that story?
Oh yeah, I love that story. I'm happy to. About the third or fourth day on my first 10-day vision quest, I was sitting under a tree, and I sort of my spot was that I was staying in. Was under this big oak tree. And I heard this voice. You know how you hear a voice in your dream? You hear the words, right? But it's not with your physical ears. It's a different, it was like that. It was like hearing the voice, but it was a dream voice kind of thing. And it said, "This is irritating me. Can you get it off?" And I thought, I was sitting there wide awake, I was not sleeping. I thought, hello? Like, who just said that? I wasn't dreaming, but it was a dream voice and it was just very direct. And so I started looking around, like, what is going on here? I'd just been spoken to very directly. And then my eye was caught by there was a branch, probably in a windstorm or something, that had fallen off the tree and was now draped over a lower branch. And so a dead branch was just on the branch, kind of stuck there. And the tree was saying to me, I just knew it instantly when I saw that, this is irritating me. Can you get it off? And so I went over and I rustled off that dead branch and I felt the tree go, thank you. And I knew that that happened. You can't tell me that wasn't real. It was so real. And I think it was like about a third or fourth day in there where I was just all of a sudden in a different state of mind. I call it dream thinking and the dreaming mind, where you're hearing the voices of nature that speak, that will speak directly to us. But that was my first, experience of being just so directly spoken to by something that what we think of is inanimate. It's not. It knew I was there. It kind of realized I could do something for it as much as it was like doing something for me, just keeping me safe and keeping me, shaded and all whatever. So yeah, we can be addressed that directly by the elements of nature.
That's
Certainly
very
by
exciting.
animals, they show up, my friends, the crows, show up at the most interesting times. I've got tons of stories there. I mean, they know what's going on. They know what's going on in this house. They know what's going on with me. Once when I was critically sick, they came and launched about 50 of them on a fence when I was critically ill. And they were just holding watch. I have a relationship with the crows. I have in my dreams and in reality, but it's like it's a part of our nature that is tragic that we've lost. And as much as I've devoted, decades now to recovering it, there's still a long journey, certainly for, it's just like, what are we going to do to reclaim these innate powers and sensibilities so that we protect this planet that is, it's like she's being just raped and torn apart and still trying to love and feed us. Like it's just, we gotta stop. So.
Yeah, the way you're describing it too, it's like the great mother, Mother Earth, like,
Yes,
yeah.
yeah, she's feeding us, nurturing us, sheltering us, doing everything she can to support our life on this earth, even as sort of radically abusive as we've been
Yeah.
and continue to be.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and actually for you, what you're sharing speaks to me in this conversation of coming home. A lot of it has been like coming home to our hearts, but also it's about coming home to her, coming home to that great mother.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, every cell in our body is made of her. We are that. She is us. She birthed us. She sustains us. And she can take that life away in a minute if she, if it hap if it wants to happen. So
Yeah. But
so
she loves us so much. Like, I
she
feel
would
that.
never, yeah, right.
I
Yeah.
know.
Although she has her furies,
Yeah.
well
And
deserved.
yes, well deserved. Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in many ways, I feel like your guidance of these vision quests and pilgrimages are in many ways returning back to her. And connecting in and coming into relationship with our dreams. It's a way of coming back home to her.
Right, exactly. Right. And that's coming back home to yourself because we are her. She is us. Yeah. It's our connection. And so, that's our true identity is children of this, mother.
Wow, what a beautiful way to come to an end of this powerful conversation. Thank you for bringing us there. It all flowed so well. I didn't know we were going to go on this journey together.
I didn't know either. Yeah, I didn't know at all. So this has just been fun. Thank you for
Yes.
sort of leading the way. It's been really delightful. Yeah.
Yes, and very
Yeah.
fun for me too. And I know, so first of all, can you share a little bit about your work? So if people want to begin working, whether they want to do vision quests, I don't know if you're still leading and guiding people in vision quests and or the dream work. Can you share about the work and courses that you're offering?
Yeah, I used to lead Vision Quest. I had a retreat center, but I sold it about 10 years ago where I led Vision Quest. I haven't been doing that. I've done a few since then. I don't see myself anytime soon leading those, but I can recommend people who do. Cader Brown lives here in Asheville, and he does. And there are others. So, you know, I recommend it as a if you're called to that. But I don't do that. But what I do do is I do private, I have private clients that I work with in dream analysis, you know, just understanding the language of your dreams and learning how to work with your dreams. And then the analysis that comes out of that, you know, the sort of the dilemmas of your inner and outer life, you know, that the dreams are pointing to, then we can talk through all that. So I'm a psychologist in that sense, in-depth psychology. So I have a private practice, and then I do lots and lots of teaching, you know, in summits and lectures. And I'm doing a course right now that's already launched. I've done 2 out of 5 courses on dreams and immortality, and the indigenous mind, you know, all of that. So I teach courses that, you know, that are with, you know, so that those can be found too.
And
just curious.
you have a global community dream symposium. Is
Oh,
that?
right. Yes, thank
Yeah.
you. Yeah, every month, Jocelyn Starfeather and I have, for almost 10 years now, conduct a global community dream symposium. People can come to the symposium every month. Look on my website, the Dream Symposium page, and you'll get the dates and you'll get the link to join. They're every month on a Friday. People, we listen to the dreams and we get to know the collective dreaming mind. I'm very interested in what the dreams have for the community, as Indigenous people always have been. They listen to their dreams as messages for the whole community. And so that's what we're doing. And the dreams have so much information and wisdom and guidance and fun, you know, and so it's so I we do that, yes. And if you go to my website, there's a videos page, and you'll have interviews and lectures and things that I've done on so many different subjects related to all this, the indigenous work, the dream work, the, you know, the various, you know, interests that I, and the quantum physics stuff, you know, like just over the, you know, years, there's a lot of information there, and you could see if any of those, you know, are interesting to you. They're all available for free there.
Wonderful. Thank you. There's so much
Yeah.
to explore.
Yeah.
And I also know that you have a podcast episode that you're sharing with our audience on Don't Think, which is probably going to help us get out of our rational mind and get
That's
outside
the
of the false
point.
construct. Yes.
Yeah, that is one of my favorite podcasts. So I've just put that one on there. I did it with Jocelyn Starfeather for the, her podcast series. Don't Think was guidance that I got on a couple of different occasions. One was by Archangel Gabriel in a dream, if you can imagine that, you know,
Wow.
and the advice was don't think, don't try to think about this, just, you know, experience it. And I went into a crop circle and I got that instantly. Don't think. You know, it was like my thinking mind wanted to kick in both of these sort of big events. And then, you know, I just started learning about the nature of, you know, which I'd already taught about the nature of thought, but what it means to get into that place where we're not thinking, where thought is not running us. And I just explored how many, like Einstein said, you know, all of his realizations came from that silent place, not from, you know, all kinds of linear equations, basically, all came from this don't think place. And so I started discovering, you know, how very many different areas of thinkers and persons talked about how going to that place is the place where all of this intelligence arises from. And so that's what I talked about in that podcast, and I really like it. So
That
yeah.
sounds fun to listen to. Thank you for
Yeah, it is.
sharing that.
You're welcome. Yeah.
So before we end, do you feel like there's any other parting wisdom that you feel is important to share in this conversation of coming home amidst everything happening, amidst everything crumbling and the rubble around us? Any parting wisdom?
Yeah. One thing I'll share is that I worked with a Nigerian shaman for quite a while. And one of the things he told me that his people, his village in Africa, They all say to build an altar to your twin self, that we all have a twin self. And that is the self that, that I guess I was referring to earlier, that was there before we got this body, they'll be there after we got this body, that's existing within this body, that understands the language of all of it, so that we have this self that isn't the same as the identity that we tend to think that we are. I think that I'm Tarya Ward, and I think I have this biography, and I think I have this history, and so forth. And I do. There is this self, but the twin self is the self that I want to be in relationship to, that walks beside me, as the poet says. I am not I. I am the one who walks beside me that I do not see. And so build an altar to that, even if it's just in your mind, is to get in touch with that you have this self, and that self is will keep you in relationship to this, your true nature. It'll bring you home.
Oh, thank you. Such a beautiful way to end this. And I'll just share personally, like the way you're speaking of your twin self, that's your true self. I've experienced this too. I'm like, are you a guy? Do you have a name? I'm like, I think it's just me. It's like me.
There you go. There you go. It's your twin self. Yeah.
I love
Great.
it. Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much, Tara, for this beautiful conversation. This has been so fun to go on this journey with you.
I just enjoyed it immensely, Emily. It's just a delight, a complete delight. And I just ask lots of blessings for all of your listeners and lots of success in, in this summit that you've created. I hope that it goes out to many, many people and helps and heals and blesses. So,
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, and thank you to everyone listening and joining in this fun journey with us, this conversation. Please stay tuned for more beautiful talks to come. Bye for now.
bye.